Greetings and salutations. Welcome back to Sacred Symbols Plus, a PlayStation podcast supplement. This is episode number 109. My name is Colin Moriarty. I'm joined once again by Last Day Media's newest contributor, Richard Rick Hoag. I'm gonna constantly do that now because I like to act like Rick is like some sort of
Maverick. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
Of Hoag Law and Virtual Legality, a lawyer, gamer. We love to have him on board for both gaming issues, but more recently for legal issues and his expertise. So, Rick, thank you for joining me. How are you?
Absolutely. I'm doing great. Start of a new week. Got a lot of stuff going on already. And I'm sure the video game industry never stops putting news in virtual legality. So I'm sure it'll be another fun one there as well.
Yeah, you're cranking those videos out. It's a great series. People should go check it out on YouTube. Good insight into legal issues. And, you know, I'm a little surprised. Do other websites have websites often or come to you, like any of the big sites, for expertise or whatever? Because they don't seem to. I read these stories, and we're going to talk about Activision today, obviously, but I read these stories and I don't see them really trying to speak to a legal expert about what their interpretations of it are. So it seems like a kind of an empty thing to me.
They have on occasion. I think I've been quoted at this point in everything. So GameSpot, IGN, Polygon, Kotaku. The ones that most prominently do it, in fact, I just gave quotes to an outlet, Game Daily Biz, this morning on there's an ongoing case that Bungie and I think Ubisoft just filed suing a cheating website. So I just gave quotes to that. And sometimes those filter around the other sites. But yeah, I would love it. I would love it. I'm social media friends with a number of people that work at the bigger sites. If I were allowed to put in my two cents before rather than after. I always feel bad about going on social media or whatever when the Bethesda deal happened and they were all talking about things like Vault or the securities filing. And I go on there and I'm like, well, no, that's completely wrong. And here's why. It's not their fault necessarily.
Right.
But here's why it's wrong. And then I would prefer to do that in advance. More and better information is always better in the first instance than the correction, because whatever it is, some fraction of the people see the correction or the update, right? But, you know, I think more and more often they're asking somebody, it doesn't have to be me. This isn't about, you know, self-aggrandizement, but I think more legal and business folks talking to those particular outlets would only be more useful in the long run.
I totally agree with you. And that's kind of the reason, and I explained this last week when we had you on to speak about this first. And by the way, I recommend people go and listen to or watch the original episode that we did about Activision Blizzard, just to kind of give you the first basis of information you'll need to kind of understand more fluently this episode. But it's the reason why I go to you. And I said it last time, I don't know what the hell I'm really talking. I mean, I can read and I went to college, I guess. I don't know. You know, I don't have like any special legal skill. And so it's good to go to you. It's good to go to someone who understands these different things. Actually, I'm recording a Sacred Symbols Plus episode later today that will go live later with Moore's Law is Dead from YouTube, and he's like a huge hardware guy, and obviously I don't know shit about gaming hardware compared to my expertise in software and design and all that. So you got to go to where the experts are and see what they think. And so we appreciate your time here. And
oh, absolutely.
I wanted to start this conversation about what's going on with Activision Blizzard really at the top. What has developed since we last spoke? Because it seems like a lot of things around the edges, from my perspective, are getting interesting. We have big outlets outside of gaming investigating this. The New York Times, for instance, published an article about this, which I think is fascinating. Of course, Activision is a huge company, but we don't often get a lot of attention. You won't see them writing about like Quantic Dream or Ubisoft very often or anything like that.
That's probably true. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting. And I thought that the employee walkout was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the relative silence from other companies was interesting. And I thought that the companies that had something to say that aren't related, like Bungie's, I thought that was interesting because I feel like they are going to get roped in. They feel like they might get roped into this. And I want to talk more about that. So
sure,
there's a lot of different angles of all of this, but I'm just wondering what has happened since we last spoke that the audience needs to understand about the maturation of the situation since we last spoke.
Sure. Well, since I've been utterly kind of bathed in this story since we last spoke, I'm having a little bit of difficulty remembering exactly where the continuation point was. But certainly in the latter half of last week, you had the walkout, you had the open letter becoming very, very public, leading to a stock price drop that was significant in one day. I think it was 3 hours of trading. It lost almost 10%. That'll wake everybody up over at Activision Blizzard, because that's a lot of money on the table. That's when Bobby Kotick has his statement, where he actually is the first one that issues a statement that appears to be vetted by public relations or legal or the board, or more likely all three. And that particular letter has a lot of empathy that is at least projected into it. I know people have their feelings about Bobby Kotick, but at least as a letter, if you take those feelings out of it, it says the right things. And then it goes forward with action items. I mean, one of the things that is always kind of missing in the early stages of those communications is, oh, you know, I feel your pain or what have you. Or if you get to the Townsend email and it's, you know, die state of California, either way, there aren't specific things that are changing or happening. And the Bobby Kotick letter at least is trying to respond in some respects to the demands that the walkout kind of movement had put forward, many of which relate to the issue at hand, some of which do not. And Activision and Mr. Kotick trying to respond to that was very, very interesting. After those two points in time, you then have effectively two more kind of scandal items. Kotaku did a good job unearthing the Facebook group with the Cosby room and that picture that just looks terrible, devastating. And we did a video on it in Virtual Legality about whether or not it's actually as terrible as it looks to us in 2021 and what the knowledge was, and how that doesn't matter ultimately. And this is one of the reasons it's going to drive Activision away from discovery and the litigation process in general, is that it's awful right now, regardless of the context. There's nothing you can do, even if you could tell the best story to the public about how that photo exists and everybody's innocent and they just were talking about pudding pops or sweaters or ugly rugs or what have you. It still looks bad today. And I think Kotaku, credit where it's owed, did a good job of finding that. And it took them, I think it was 4 days or something like that. And so you can only imagine how much other stuff is potentially in there when you're talking about a 10,000 person company over the course of a decade. And so that happened. And then at the same time, that Bobby Kotick letter that was pretty well received, the investors certainly liked it, there was a bounce up in the price, had one significant issue that was reported on all over the place in the world of video games, which is that Wilmer Hale was reported as a union busting law firm, which I think is a little bit unfair insofar as they're an employer facing law firm. And most large law firms are going to be that way for reasons that you can find if you don't like lawyers or law firms or both, you know, systematic in their nature. Employers are more able to pay large legal fees in general. So most large law firms are going to be employer rather than employee facing. Is that union busting? Certainly, they appear to have had Amazon as a client and worked in those efforts. That's going to be a reasonable minds can differ type thing. The bigger issue for me was that Bobby Kotick presented it in his letter as if in the slot of an independent audit, that they were going and they were finding a third party to look over their HR resources, their policies and procedures in an effort to kind of answer one of the demands that was made as part of the walkout. And it reads as independent. I don't think they actually wind up saying the word independent, but one of the things I said when I was going over his statement in Virtual Legality was, you know, if I were on the other side of the table here, the very first thing I would check is there a relationship between that firm and this company? That's the exact thing you look at in a contract negotiation. And of course, within 24 hours, not only are they related, Wilmer Hale is Activision's securities counsel. People went and found securities filings that were signed by Wilmer Hale. And the reason that that's a concern if you're on the employee side of things is that you now have a revenue stream, you have a customer relationship between Wilmer Hale and Activision, then Activision says you asked that law firm to audit you, you have certain expectations of, not bias necessarily, I don't want to disparage, Wilmer Hale is a big, good law firm, but it's just natural for human beings to say, well, I'd prefer to take a softer hand on the people that pay my bills if I can.
Sure.
And so that's the state of play as I understand it. I think some more has come out. Certainly there are people picking around the edges of various stories. I think there was a story over the weekend about a Minneapolis IT person that worked at Activision that I didn't think was actually terribly useful for the overall narrative structure, because as best I can tell, you're looking specifically at a bad apple in that circumstance. And even in the story presented, it looks like Activision reported him to the authorities. So I'm not sure what exactly you want out of a company in that regard. You can't eliminate bad actors out of humanity. You can only respond to them as best you can. So that one I thought was a little overblown, but that's the kind of thing that Activision's looking at. That's part of the story, is you'll see more and more of those things pop up, even if Hogue on his YouTube channel thinks that's overblown, even if it's not a big deal for the actual legal case with the state of California, still looks bad. And people respond to that. And that hurts your PR and everything else. So Activision's in a world of hurt right now in terms of massaging their messaging. And I say that in the understanding that there was another article, I think, over the weekend from Dean Tack at GamesBeat, VentureBeat, that got absolutely pilloried for essentially talking about Activision losing the PR war and talking about it specifically from an analytical and messaging perspective, which that's what I do, right? So it was interesting to see that there is that level of passion and emotionality for what I view as essentially a business analytics discussion on that score. You don't have to agree or disagree with Activision to say, here's what's happening with their messaging. That's what you're seeing now 10 days on is an Activision that has a no confidence vote effectively from its own employees with an entire cadre of people online ready to eat it for any mistake it's had in the last two decades. And that's not where you want to live if you're Activision Blizzard.
It's very well put. I mean, there's a lot of interesting information, I think, to go through here because, and I wanted to start, and you had mentioned him several times with Bobby Kotick himself. We had mentioned that Kotick had, we mentioned last time we spoke, and I don't know that many people think about it from this perspective, but Kotick saved Activision back in the day and it has been the CEO of Activision for a very long time, for 40 years. And I feel like he's intrinsically linked to this company. And I don't know, I'm wondering, we talked about kind of the foibles of the initial statement, and then him kind of coming out. You said that kind of calmed the waters a little bit. I mean, how is his performance in this? And it, at a normal company, this would be something that a CEO would almost certainly pay for, right? So I can't imagine that.
You mean pay for with his job?
Yeah, exactly. That I imagine the board would have to make an example of somebody. I don't know why you wouldn't go to the very top, but I'm saying in this situation, I feel like it's unimaginable to think that he won't be the CEO when this comes through. And I guess I'm just curious, how's the C-suite handling this, and what do you expect out of Bobby Kotick moving forward?
Well, I mean, I think he handled it fine when he decided to take up the emergency reins. I think if you want to criticize, certainly earlier in the messaging, is that they might have needed a stronger hand earlier on. We don't know who was directing the multitude of emails that went out to employees. But out of those multitudes, one of the things that Activision Blizzard 100% should have known is that they would all be leaked. So you can't have crosstalk. You can't have things that aren't going to be interpreted by third parties. You know that's going to happen. That's the first thing that you know, because you've got a huge company. And if you're trying to talk to those employees, somebody's going to link it to Bloomberg or Kotaku or Polygon or whoever they think will be most useful to their message. And in fact, that's what happened. So you should have known that going in. That wasn't unforeseen for anybody that's kind of doing this on a regular basis. And that was a failure. And Bobby Kotick swinging in with his statement 6 days later feels very much like, oh, everybody else screwed it up. Here I'm going to come in and fix it. But his job was to make sure that those first four didn't screw it up to begin with. So in part, I think they've righted the ship a little bit in terms of this communication, but they're in such bad waters now because of that early stage, because of the no confidence from the people that you need confidence from, that I think this is a big, big misstep for Activision Blizzard, past the human toll, past the stories, past the harm, past the state of California lawsuit. It's that first week where I think a lot of people look at the company and say, what are you even doing? Now, is that going to improve? I don't think it can get worse. And I think from that letter, Activision Blizzard hasn't quite made the same mistakes, primarily because silence is the best policy now. You've got some statements out there. The journalists are going to do what they're going to do because there's blood in the water. And I'm certain that they will find more. But I think right this second, it's essentially quiet, preparing your legal defense and doing the tricky thing of trying to prepare your strong legal defense in a manner that you now know is going to be read by mass media in a way that even if the legal defense would be something that would be effective for you, if it would sound bad, you probably have to try to start couching that even in formal legal documents. And that's the trick, because there's plenty of defenses you can bring that essentially sound like you're the most callous and cold corporation in the history of the planet. But you are now playing the PR game simultaneously with the legal defense game. So they're going to have to file something with the court pretty soon. And it'll be interesting to see how they wind up writing that and what mistakes are made or not in that preparation.
What would be the usual response of a corporation is caught in a situation like this, particularly when it seems like at least some of the people that were responsible for some of these issues kind of left voluntarily?
Have been dealt with, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're gone. Or if they're there, I imagine they're going to get cut off. I mean, I guess I'm just kind of curious, like, what do you think Activision's, the proper response from Activision should be in light of the fact that these are, many of these allegations are older, stretched over time, and it's, I know they're like going through and like removing people's names from World of Warcraft and all of that, but is there anything from a personnel level that we should expect for them to do? That's why I was kind of wondering, like, it's
personnel
kind of
level in terms of firing.
Yeah. Like, or, yeah, exactly. I can't imagine any of these people can be held personal or, you know, personally liable for their activities through work. Right. Or is that a separate thing? Cause so, I guess, I guess I'm just curious what could possibly be the personnel reaction to this.
Well, so the state of California has accused Bungie Activision. Sure. Mm-hmm. You know, sorry about that, Bungie. Blizzard Activision. We'll talk about Bungie later. Of essentially doing this itself, you know, intentionally discriminating, intentionally harassing. So to the extent you've got senior management that you can go and find smoking guns saying, yes, let's keep women's pay down, let's foment harassment, you start to have personal culpability, whether that's now in a civil context or even being handed over to the AG's office for a criminal context, that kind of thing. In terms of personnel movement, you know, I think they've been a part of the investigation. They've been trading data and emails with California for years now. It's come to our attention recently. It hasn't come to their attention recently. So some of the movement that you've already seen, the firings in 2020, are undoubtedly a response to being investigated by the state of California. At the same time, it's why you can't give them full credit for those kinds of things. They've been responding for the last 2 years on the fly. Now, in the midst of a public relations disaster, and while you're trying to defend your case as essentially California acting untowards, overbroad, whatever you want to frame it as, you're probably not going to take a lot of things that look like an admittance of guilt right this second. So maybe the state of California gets back to the mediation table or settlement table with you and demands some management changes, and you evaluate those if you're Activision. But as of right this second, unless there's some real smoking gun stuff that some outlet finds that Activision wasn't aware of or was hiding, I don't think there are going to be a lot of big moves in the C-suite or otherwise, except maybe that they'll give the Fran Townsend head to the employees, because that one just has clearly been the one that has really been targeted by them. And she's only been with them for 4 months.
Right. That's what I'm so glad you brought that up. You read my mind, because I wanted you to talk a little bit about their chief compliance officer, Fran Townsend.
Sure.
She plays an interesting role in this. It's hard for me to see if she blundered as badly as she did, or if the blunders are magnified by her political associations from the past that make it easy to defame her. So I'm just curious where you stand on her, if you can tell everyone who she is and what role she plays in this.
Sure. Fran Townsend is their chief compliance officer, which can mean a lot of different things, but primarily she's working with the company to ensure compliance with laws and regulations and license requirements and everything else, which is a little bit ironic in this particular context. I think I said in my video when she first spoke that I was seeing in journalism outlets, and we saw this from some of the tweets that went out about the email when it first started, that they kept referencing her curriculum vitae from, I think it's like the early 2000s, where she was a Bush administration advisor, which is, of course, only one job that she's held, but it's certainly one that seems to ring a lot of bells for the people reporting on it. And so I said in my video, I said, well, that's neither here nor there for this purpose. But clearly it bothers a lot of folks. And you see that kind of spiraling into certain news articles talking about generalized kind of Republican representation in the Activision executive level, which, you know, I think is perfectly fine to report on if you feel so inclined, but it does tend to muddy the waters because people are so passionate about their politics one way or another. And whether or not she did bad in this particular correspondence is really not specifically related to what jobs she held in the past. That said, I think basically everybody has circled around that email and that response as the big problem. The interesting thing from my perspective is that I doubt very much that it was, you know, 100% authored by her. I don't think that's, you're getting pure, unfiltered Townsend in that email. It matches a lot of the bullet points for what was the initial response from Activision Blizzard on that Thursday when the California lawsuit came out. It's just a lighter version of that. So that one feels, if not vetted, at least created by committee, a little bit more than some of the I feel your pain emails from the president of Activision, the president of Blizzard that had come out the days before. So that still to me feels like a corporate communication. And then you start asking questions. It's like, why her? You hear her say in the first paragraph of that email that she's the head of, I believe, I can't remember what their exact committee is called, but their women's group at Activision Blizzard. that's the kind of reason why, if you are Activision Blizzard, you would pick her to be the signatory to that kind of email. And if that is in fact the case, if it's not necessarily all of her thoughts, she was picked for this purpose for essentially messaging reasons, I think you're getting into a situation where she might well be the head to roll. In fact, I think she'll will at least be taken off the women's group, if nothing else. And she didn't necessarily deserve it insofar as she was representing the company in that capacity. And I would be very surprised if that was just her thoughts in that email.
Well, I imagine you're probably right. And the way I was thinking about it in my own head, Rick, was she's a C-suite Activision executive, probably on a seven-figure salary with bonuses and stock options. And they could probably go to her and massage it and be like, listen, you know, we're obviously going to pay you the rest of your contract, and we know you're going to jump on this grenade, but it's a very lucrative one. I imagine I'd be happy to do that, depending on the situation. You know, if my only error was that I was too bullish and I have to take a kind of a corporate bullet, because the other side of it is she, I guess, creates another series of limbo for them, you know, where it's like, it would be funny if she kind of stabbed them back and was like, you're making me take the fall for something I didn't do. And that creates this whole fucking vertical of like, of extra drama.
She could. And that would be an interesting twist in the stories, because you'd then presumably have the people that are most interested in this flip around a defender on this kind of stuff, which would be odd. But no, I mean, I don't think, just judging on the way Activision Blizzard handled it for the first couple of days, I don't think they were playing four-dimensional chess and knew that this would be a fall on your sword type email. That email still reads as if the communication we need to make is that the state of California is out to kill us, and we need to rally together to fight off this imminent evil threat from the outside. And the misread there was that there were folks on the inside that didn't feel that way. And when that happens, you get that disconnect, and then it grows and it spirals, and that's what happened. But, you know, in other circumstances where you do have an outside party that's attacking your firm, you can circle the wagons that way. That kind of email will be successful, and they misread the room completely.
It seems that way. Sometimes I think companies don't realize it's best to maybe sometimes take your time and make sure you have your T's crossed and your I's dotted, as opposed to saying something quickly.
Yeah.
I never really quite understood the need for speed. I feel like that comes a lot from the social media era, but take some time. All right. So we've talked about Bobby Kotick a little bit. I'm still a little skeptical of his. I just don't understand how a CEO can not be held culpable in some way for the complete failure of a certain part of his company. Although, again, I don't know what's going to happen there, and I doubt anything will. We've talked about Fran Townsend, and I agree the kind of tenuous connection to the Bush administration. I felt that was very political. It's very similar to the story you brought up where the guy in Minneapolis was like
doing bad stuff.
In. Yeah, doing horrible things, but they dealt with him. And so I feel like, again, that's why I want to do these episodes, to be very careful about the way we're talking about things and try to be fair so that people have, I mean, it's fucking awful. You don't have to make anything up, right? Like, it's pretty bad. So I wanted to talk to the net, because you're right. After we spoke last, Kotaku published their story about the Cosby Room.
Yes.
Now, this I felt like was a massive nuclear blast for Activision. And I agree with what you said at the top. It doesn't really matter the context, because my mind immediately went there too.
Yes.
I was like, wait, what was
everybody.
The date? Yeah. I was like, 2013. I'm like, I feel like, now I'm sure that it was an open secret in entertainment circles and comedian circles and stuff, but it was Hannibal Buress didn't say anything about it till the next year. So I certainly wasn't aware of it at that time. And I think I watched like a Netflix like special he did that year, actually. So I don't know that this is being interpreted quite right. But right. I think it suggests a few things: a very flippant and loose culture at Blizzard specifically that borders on, and it seems like veers into, completely inappropriate at times. Because I know they tried to defend this Cosby Room as saying like spouses were there. You know, I believe all of that, but it speaks to a more flippant and loose culture. And when I saw this, Rick, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. No.
if I were them, I'd be like, yeah, that's the end. So what did you think of this story?
Oh, yeah. No, I think my immediate tweet, I saw it. Well, you know, as you know, when this kind of thing happens and it's in your subject matter, you get 6 million DMs. So I was made aware of this as it happened. And I tweeted out, oh, yeah, no, Activision sure as hell doesn't want discovery. And that was my only tweet. And then I went and made a video about it. And I looked into it. And, you know, I think there is a question about 2013. And my commenters were not exactly arguing with me. But I said, look, I didn't know about it really until the middle of the 2010s. I wasn't paying attention to it. There's way too much going on in any given moment to pay attention to everything. But doesn't mean they weren't. It also doesn't mean, by the way, that you have to impute knowledge to every single person in that room or even in that picture. It can
I thought about that too. Yeah.
It can be your bad actor guy. It can be one individual that knows why he's doing this and putting the photo up, and everybody else is like, Puddin' Pops or what have you in 2013. And I think you can give that kind of benefit of doubt. I think one of the things that connected with me, I think one of them said in their letter, do you really believe that we have all these photos of people smiling and laughing around and holding a photo of a rapist because he's a rapist? And, you know, that to me connects, which is like, no, you probably wouldn't have that many people with full knowledge of it. It doesn't mean there's none. And you get into this fight. The most important thing is, as you describe it completely correctly, though, is that it's a nuclear bomb for Activision. When it happens, it looks terrible. The context doesn't matter because, one, you can't win that fight either direction because the original complaints were in 2005 and 6. And even if the prosecutor went out in public, which he did, and said, I don't have enough evidence to convict, which he did, as we now know, to try to get a civil case, which is ultimately what wound up overturning the conviction later on, is still going to hit the public zeitgeist in 2006 as, oh, he was accused of stuff, but they didn't have enough evidence. And you can only do so much with that from the outside looking in. And sure, if you're Hannibal Buress and you're on 30 Rock, somebody brought up that he had done a joke about Cosby, and I think they said in 2009 or something on 30 Rock. It's like, yeah, this stuff is floating around. I don't know that you can impute bad intention to all those folks. Now, you can certainly impute bad intention in general with what the Kotaku article puts up there, which is, hey, we got this chat group of we're gonna have 7 million bottles of booze in the hotel room, and we're going to go try to get ladies into the hotel room. Now, that in of itself, you know, is what it is, but it looks bad all around, especially in the context of both 2021 and what we know about Bill Cosby and the state of California's lawsuit and a general argument against the company on the whole. So if there's more of that kind of stuff out there, it will just continue to hit and hit and hit and hit.
I feel like the bigger complimentary bomb, let's say, the hydrogen bomb to the small nuclear bomb, was actually the complimentary story or picture of this conversation that I guess they were having, in which Jesse McCree, who's kind of he's a designer, or was, I don't know where he is now, but he was a big designer on Warcraft. They said something like, all these guys are talking, and I'm reading it now in this BlizzCon group chat, and Dave Kosak says, you can't marry all of them, Alex. And Alex says, I can, I'm Middle Eastern. And then Jesse McCree says, you misspelled fuck.
Yep.
And
he does.
That tied in with the group name BlizzCon Cosby Crew, tied in with the picture of them in the bed with the Cosby portrait. I was like, all right, because I'm trying to be as fair as I can. I'm really trying to be as fair as I can. And it's like, do you know the reference? Okay, you know the reference. You want to associate with the reference. Okay, you want to associate with the reference. Do you want to be around an image of the rapist, right? Do you want to get in a picture with the rapist? Do you want to put the picture of the rapist on the internet? All these things you kind of have to jump. I feel like each is a leap of logic that I'm not quite comfortable with yet. When I read that, just that screenshot that they published, I mean, this wasn't something that someone leaked. That was the other thing where, isn't that kind of, I feel like no one's really talking, or very few people are focusing on that, that it sets this stage for a sexually charged, for better or for worse, a sexually charged situation where they're all very comfortable saying these kinds of things. You can't help but tie those things together. Isn't that important?
Well, I'll admit that I don't know the specifics. The Kotaku reporting, if I recall correctly, said it was a Facebook group. And my understanding was it was a private Facebook group, and they got the leaked images from one of the people in the group at the time.
Right. So you're saying Alex posted that in a group, that chat.
That's how I understood it, but it's not terribly specifically reported. So yes, it's published, but it's not published to you or I.
Right, right. Okay, fair enough.
At the time.
Fair enough.
Still stupid. Still silly. Don't do this. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm disinclined to give the benefit of the doubt, but you can construct a benefit of the doubt story here where, in essence, whatever the story is, bad rug, bad sweaters, you found the picture at the flea market and you thought it was funny, whichever one you want to go with, it just becomes the Bill Cosby room, and it was always going to have a silly name. Whatever your sex suite at BlizzCon was going to be, whether it was Bill Cosby or Barney the Dinosaur, you guys were going to do something stupid And as it turns out, however many years on, it's much more than stupid in 2021. I can kind of imagine that. It doesn't make it any better from a kind of judgment perspective. It's clear that they were treating this kind of situation, BlizzCon, as a pickup market. And they're rock stars in that context, right? I mean, they're the Blizzard developers. So none of that reads well, but I can at least construct a picture where, yes, I've been in environments where, you know, somebody finds a picture at a flea market and it's goofy, and then suddenly it's the Bill Cosby room, or it's the Bill Murray room, and you just found a picture of Bill Murray, and now that's what it is. And then in 2021, it wouldn't look quite as bad, one assumes.
Right. Yeah, that's actually an interesting point. And again, yeah, I don't necessarily feel like this deserves the benefit of the doubt, any of it.
I'm
just trying to be fair, because it's easy to be incredibly negative and condemn them, which we do, but I want to at least have a structure from which I'm condemning them, as opposed to just doing it from the hip.
Yeah, so, no, I think there's a lot of circumstantial stuff there, but
yeah.
I think you can construct a story where they're just unlucky as to what they picked for that purpose. I'm with you. I'm disinclined to give them that full benefit, but it's either way, it doesn't matter if you're Activision. It looks awful.
Let's talk a little bit about, you had mentioned earlier, and I feel like this was a totally random tangent, which was Bungie jumping in. Now, for people that don't know, Bungie was an independent developer. Then they were with Microsoft in their first party. Then they were independent again, but with Activision in a publishing deal.
Right.
And then they left, and now they kind of published Destiny 2 on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have this close working relationship with Activision during the time in which many of these accusations were happening. Mm-hmm. And I had mentioned, I think, either on Sacred Symbols last week with you or a regular episode of it, where you're not hearing too much about the specifics about their various companies. Like, you're not hearing about like the frat house culture of Raven or the outrageous behavior at Treyarch or something like that. You're hearing a lot of it through their publisher, through the apparatus that funds and shepherds their games. Bungie is certainly saving themselves because they assume they're going to get caught up in this, right? I mean, they might already know, right, that if they're being investigated too. I just don't understand why they would say what they said, which, and to just put it out there, some of it, they say, let's see, we have a zero tolerance policy at Bungie for environments that support this toxic culture. And it's later they say, we don't pretend that Bungie is perfect and that no one has experienced harassment while working here, but we will not tolerate it, etc. So it just felt like you're not seeing other studios saying that, because I don't know why they would want to make themselves the story. So what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think Bungie speaks, because that happened almost the day or the day after the California lawsuit gets made public. I think Bungie speaks in an environment where a few companies were speaking and doing, you know, what I called preening, which is establishing that they're better than what you're seeing in the news right now. And the Bungie relationship makes it more interesting. But I do think there were a couple of folks, a couple of companies, certainly smaller usually in general than Bungie, a number of independent developers that were going out and saying, you know, we're great and we believe in all this stuff and everything, which is fine. Bungie says the right thing. Bungie says zero tolerance. Bungie also says the right thing from a practical perspective, which is nobody can keep stuff from happening. You can hire a saint, then they're a saint for 40 years, and then on one day they're not a saint. And how you respond to that is what the law demands. It's not trying to prevent everybody from doing anything, because that's impossible. So Bungie says the right things there. Why they say it is an open question. So in terms of correspondence, in terms of if you get to discovery, Activision Blizzard, this particular kind of complaint would open up a whole lot of discovery. It's opening up everything compensation-wise. It's opening everything up from a perspective of all of the jobs that the people do. You think about it, not from the harassment side, which has a little bit more narrow things, where you had a cube crawl, where you had a Cosby sweep, all these kinds of things. The discrimination stuff, which is the 25 pages out of 30 in this particular lawsuit, you have to go, if you're California, and you have the right to go and try to figure out who has substantially similar jobs. What services were they performing? What was Raven doing? What was High Moon doing? What was Treyarch doing with respect to Destiny 2 and that expansion that they were doing with Activision? What was everybody doing? Because that's the crux of your men and women aren't paid the same, which means if you think about it, almost everything at Activision Blizzard is potentially open up for discovery as part of this. And that means that there will undoubtedly be correspondence and memos and contractual materials and presentations and everything else as between Bungie and Activision, because Activision, when they were publishing it, was using its own resources to help Destiny 2 and help get Destiny 2 out to market. And so all of that comes into play. So whether or not Bungie right now, proper, separate from Activision, gets caught up in it, there will certainly be stuff from people that are currently there that will be looked at. And you would presume Bungie wouldn't necessarily be responsible for any of that because it's all an inquiry as to Activision and Activision Blizzard's problems. But anytime you've got corporate materials that are going to be the subject of something, you're sweating it, right? Primarily because you don't know what you don't know. I don't have to disparage Bungie to say, look, you don't know what's in 400,000 emails in 2007. You just don't. Right. And so if somebody's going through those, you're worried about it because people are people and somebody probably said something. Somebody sent a meme with a Cortana in a compromising position. And with Bungie's real background, not recently. Sorry, 343. and then that becomes something. Oh, were you harassing that person? You don't. Everything lacks context in this particular scenario, and you're worried at all if you've ever touched Activision Blizzard. So Bungie going out there with that doesn't surprise. I think when you see another company like that going through what they're going through, it's a little bit technical legal term of art, uncool. To go out and just preen about how much better you are at the same time. But I think that's part of why Bungie did it.
All right. So we've kind of established that it would be a mass. I think we've established that it would be a massive error for Activision to let this go to trial, right? I mean, they can't possibly let themselves be open to discovery in this sense, right? So can we assume that they're going to, or maybe already working to settle this?
I think every single one of these is more likely to settle than not. The question is always, how emotional are you? That reaction on Thursday after the lawsuit gets made public is the only time that I've really thought, oh, they might just take it. They might just go to the mattresses because they're just really, really angry about all this. But once you lose your employees, once they're walking out on you, once it's clear that everybody's against you, rightly or wrongly, if you're inclined to give Activision Blizzard the benefit of the doubt, you know, I say judge these things for yourself. I'm a little less inclined, but even if you think Activision Blizzard's getting railroaded completely by the state of California, the job of the executives, their legal team and everything else now, it's a civil action, is to go figure out how to get those damages and that liability exposure as low as possible and start making video games again and get out of the spotlight. So yeah, I still think settlement is more likely. The discovery process for a claim like this would be devastating, I think. But you never know, because if they just decide that this is the righteous hill that they want to die on, I've seen companies essentially commit suicide because they just decide to have this fight when it's not one that they can win, either in a court of law or, more specifically for Activision Blizzard, the court of public opinion.
I've been running through my head like all of the things that they would have to line up. They'd have to get everyone, I guess, to agree that they can't sue again, right? Maybe not talk about certain things. There just seems to be a lot of things in play where maybe someone's going to be like, no, we're not doing this, forcing Activision to defend itself. And I know we mentioned last week, I just think from an industry point of view, watching what happened with Epic and Apple and how they just fucked so many of their partners through discovery.
They did.
I think I don't know that was their intention. And I know a lot of that has since gone and they blacked that stuff out and were more careful with it. But it still happened. And I imagine
First 3 days of that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was great. I mean, it was totally awesome. I don't give a fuck about what they're worrying about over there.
The first 3 days of that was crazy.
It was great because I don't know how none of them knew that this was going to be like a thing people were going to care about much more than the case itself.
It was the court. I mean, it really wasn't Epic and Apple. The court put that stuff up to prep for the testimony the next day and didn't think twice about the portal they were using, which they made public. Nobody cheated on this. There was no hacking or anything. It was just the court putting stuff up that was silly. And they corrected it about 5 days in. But it was that was a crazy couple days. Sony was the ones that were really pissed.
Yeah, I bet, because they have nothing to do with it. They're like a total side party to this.
Oh, and Epic's an investor.
Yeah, it's true. I was going to say, actually. So what about, and this kind of happened in parallel, but I assume it's an influential thing on the culture of Activision, is this employee walkout, this letter signed by thousands of them.
Yeah,
and a lot. kind of making demands, some serious and specific demands. I wonder if you think that anything will come of that.
Well, I mean, I think yes. I mean, I think there'll have to be some response. I think the Bobby Kotick letter and the action items were suggestive of trying to respond in the way that they felt was palatable without going too much further. I think if you look at those bullet points in that Kotick letter, they mostly match up with what's being requested of Activision. By the walkout participants, you also would have seen their response that said, no, that's not good enough for us. Some of their requests are, as I describe it as a corporate lawyer, again, you gotta put your tilt out there so people can evaluate it as much as they want on that basis. I view as not possible. You know, they have discussions of company-wide approval of hiring policies and procedures and things where you're just not going to have 9,000 employees agree as to what your policy for interviewing people at conferences and whether you go to certain states or whatever is going to be allowed. It's just, it's too many cooks. It's not how the company's going to operate. They're not going to give up that authority. And there's similar things in there where they ask for what amounts to an employee ownership vote or a veto maybe. That's always going to be a problem for a big publicly traded corporation. You know, it's different. You can have those kinds of employee voices if you're closely held. If you have an employee incentive / governance program that is designed to kind of emulate employee control of the entity along with management and capital. But for a big public company, it's just not going to fly in most instances. And the management knows that. So their goal would be to try to get them something of what they need. You have to get your employees back while also not blowing up the company that makes $1 billion on selling Call of Duty again. It's a real tricky thing that they are trying to deal with right now. And I think your question about personnel, more than the investors, more than the public, if there are changes to be made at Activision, they will primarily be in the interest of trying to convince the employees that they are trying to get better / are getting better for whatever the grievance is that the employees feel is the strongest. That's why Ms. Townsend is the most likely, because they've circled around her. And those are the ones where you're going to try to respond in some fashion, because ultimately your 4-month pandemic compliance officer, probably not somebody that's 100% required for Call of Duty and Activision to function. So you go find a different compliance officer.
Yeah, certainly not. How does this connect to what we were talking about earlier with Activision's law firm that has some union busting bona fides, I guess, like you said, with Amazon and others?
Yeah.
And the drive, I think, that this could cause for unionization, this is obviously a constant topic. Do you feel like there's any chance that something union centric is drawn out of this, either at Activision or more generally in the industry? Because it seems like that is what people are pushing for, at least in the activist sphere.
Well, the people pushing for it's always interesting, right? Yeah, you know, I'm from the Detroit area. We are unionized here in Michigan, and I've been around unions my whole life, and I think they can serve good purposes, they can serve bad purposes. They're like really any organization or institution that you have. And so I look at journalists and the people that have really taken on that flag, that banner themselves, and I say, you know, take a pause. This is really about the employees and the people at issue. So if there's going to be unionization in gaming, I don't have a problem with it if it works for the people that are the ones that are deciding to join the union and are getting that out of it. I don't think unions actually solve this particular issue too terribly well. I mean, if you go and you look at the Ubisoft story, their union winds up suing Ubisoft because they didn't stop HR. They didn't get HR working properly. They didn't stop harassment. That's the claim that's made by that union. So in general, this is a hard one to see them helping too much on. But if they want to do it, game unions are probably going to look different than auto workers unions are probably going to look different, even from movie unions a little bit, because there's such a breadth of skill set that's required to make a video game. I can't imagine that you just have a gamers union. You'd probably have it separated into, you know, essentially talent groups similar to movies, but obviously different in style. And so it'll be interesting to see if that winds up happening. I'm of the belief that it's unlikely, because I think you are going to have just kind of a wildly disparate group of people at each level and in each skill and discipline. And I think that tends to be why this happens. I don't know. This is probably one of those moments where it's going to be reevaluated by a lot of folks. But it will be interesting to follow. And To me, the only thing I don't like about it is I really don't like journalists and others who don't have skin in the game, who aren't making this decision for themselves, telling folks what's right or wrong for them. Because I think unions can be right for a number of people in a number of circumstances. I think they can be wrong for a number of people in a number of circumstances. And I just from my personal philosophy and perspective on these things, I never feel comfortable telling you what's good for your life in, when I don't know jack about your particular situation, your job, your role, your salary, or what you're feeling.
Yeah, very well said. A kind of postscript I want to put on this before we go is really only tertiarily involved with what we're talking about, but I was curious about it. I mean, it's involved, but it really has no relevance, let's say. But I was curious about this. Jason Schreier, the journalist, came out and said that he had known the rumblings at Activision Blizzard for years. This seemed to me to be an unnecessary error on his part. And although I stayed out of it for multiple reasons, like this whole hullabaloo, I don't like Jason, so I'm not going to, I feel like it's going to come off as disingenuous. It's not about me. The story's not about me. It's about these women mostly that are being, so I don't want to, and I don't think the story's necessarily about Jason, but I am curious now that I have someone here to speak with that. I'm not talking about the morals of it. I'm not talking about the any ethical quandary he's in or the journalistic kind of stuff, but has he made himself open to, if this did go to court, to be subpoenaed because he knows things? That's what I was kind of curious about.
That's the right question, actually. I thought you were going to ask if he could get in trouble directly, and that's a lot.
No.
I don't think he has.
Yeah, I don't think he has. I personally don't necessarily think he made the wrong call.
See, I don't either. Rumors are hard.
They are. What I am kind of curious about is like, hey, Jason, did you talk to someone at Activision about what you learned? Because that's what I would have done, and that's the question I wanted to really publicly ask him. It's not that I think you should report on it. If you can't report on it, you can't. There's a million things I know that I don't know well enough to report on. Sure. But I'm more curious, even more tertiarily, if he actually spoke to someone at Activision and said, hey, man, I'm hearing these things about you. I think that's where his ethical quandary comes in. But I'm more curious if he's opened himself up, because he basically said like, yeah, people have been talking to me about this for years. And it's like, oh, really? I mean, if I were the lawyers for, you know, the representatives of the, you know, not Activision, but whatever they would be, the plaintiffs, then I would be like, oh, we should definitely subpoena Jason Schreier. You know,
I think that's a possibility. You've got a nationwide reporter going out there saying, I know stuff. That's basically all you need to get on the witness list, I think. So, I mean, it's, yeah, I think certainly. I think more, certainly from a public perception view, he definitely opened himself up to criticism, which I think is not necessarily warranted, as we just talked about. But I saw that as well. Now, I didn't see it directly, you know, speaking of Mr. Schreier, because I've been blocked from him for like years.
Yeah, he blocked me too.
But I think he did probably open himself to potentially answering some questions to somebody. But chances are, I mean, that story is, you know, you're keeping sources quiet if you want. And that's how you get, you know, like New York Times journalists in jail, because you're going to have a source fight on that probably.
Right.
But I think it's probably worth the conversation if I'm representing California for somebody to go out there and say, I know some stuff. And then it would be a matter of what he shares or elects not to share. But yeah, I think there's going to be all of those. You say it's tertiary. It's all kind of one big ball of problems for a lot of people touching on all of this stuff. And that can include journalists, because if it's as rampant as California says, if it's intentional and you have all of these touch points for a very public company in a very public field, you know, one of the public's questions is, how could we not hear anything about what is described in that lawsuit forever as people that bought World of Warcraft or bought Warcraft or Starcraft or anything else? Somebody's not doing their job then, if it's as obvious as California says. And if it's not as obvious as California says, well, then that reporting is a little different as well. You know, and so we're stuck in a question of, something doesn't check out here completely from some story, from some angle. And that's why, as always, I say, take a pause. Keep evaluating. The complaint is very interesting. What's happened since is very interesting. This story is a long way from coming to any kind of conclusion. So, you know, keep thinking about what you see happening and figure it out from there.
Yeah, we'll have you back. I didn't expect to have you back as imminently to follow up on it, but I definitely want to keep following.
That was fun.
Yeah. And I am happy with the response. I think people like these more intellectual and staid conversations. Yeah, I wanted to just postscript the stuff with Jason because I was like, when I read that, I'm like, oh, Jason, we know how cool you are, man. But I think stepped in it, my friend.
See, yeah, so I'm also disinclined to give Jason the benefit of that. That strikes me as the two poles of that being, okay, I want to establish that I'm in the know and I have all this information. And so I put that out there and you say, oh, well, the ramifications of that are not what you expected. And it's, you can understand it because that's his shtick, is he's got the inside sources and he's the guy. And so it's like, oh no, I knew all about this. It's like, oh, you don't want to say that. Go talk to your lawyer, Jason.
Yeah. Dummy. All right.
You don't want to say that.
Well, Mr. Hogue, I appreciate your time today. Everyone should go check out Rick's content on virtual legality. He's often, he makes appearances on our shows. He makes appearances on the Iron Lords podcast and other places. And you can, of course, where are you licensed? In Michigan only?
I am licensed in Michigan only. Michigan's a great state. What do you mean only?
I don't mean only. I mean just Michigan. Yeah, I guess that's even worse. I was just going to say, because people can maybe they, you know, someone needs
oh, yeah, absolutely. Help. Well, if people that don't know the legal practice, yeah, I've got clients all around the country. In fact, I've got international clients. I can practice law here from Michigan. And I can talk about things in any state in the country and other countries. And then if there are issues that relate specifically to that jurisdiction, then my recommendation is always we got to bring in somebody local. But yeah, no, I work with companies all over the place.
Right. Absolutely. My lawyers are still in California, so it's totally fine too. They say if they ever have to represent me, then they would have to pass me off to someone. But
that's right. Somebody that's barred in their state.
All right. Well, Rick, I appreciate you. I appreciate all of you out there for your love, kindness, and support of Sacred Symbols Plus. We're going to make this one free for everyone immediately as well, just because of the subject matter. But remember, we do most of these behind a paywall, and you can get that at patreon.com/laststandmedia. All things Sacred Symbols, Knockback, Defining Duke, etc. So we'll see you next time for more Sacred Symbols Plus. Thanks again. Be well. Goodbye. Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand LLC, and is proudly recorded in the USA. The show was conceived by, is written by, and is directed by me, Colin Moriarty. My co-hosts are Chris Raygun Maldonado and Dustin Furman. The show is produced by executive producer Dustin Furman. It's edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by my best friend, Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand's shows, including Sacred Symbols, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer level on Patreon, our highest tier, and we're grateful for your thoughtful and kind contributions to our independent endeavor. Thank you. Andrew Morgan, Stephen Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, Jerome Ferreira, SLVFMA, Jorge Palomino, Daniel Diamore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Jordan Mittman, Tristan Palacios, Graham Plays, Christian Rodriguez, Jad Rita, Kurt M. Gillenberg, Patrick Skipper, Anthony Fuentes, Sweaty Mitt, John Russell, Chris Kelly, Evaristo One, Dustin Graff, Israel Pena, Peyton Stone, Roberto, Josh Hallen Rui, Corbin Dallas, Tyler Watkins, Troilus True, Dan Root, Talisman, Randall Hulsey, Robbie Nauman, Nuke Dukem, William Colbert, Dr. Stump, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Betty Ann Moriarty, Callan Lennon, Daniel Johnson, H-Trons, an unofficial controller podcast, Ethan Davies, Jay Getter, Manuel Ochoa, Jeffrey Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Galja, Of Fortuna, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Poot, Gavin Newland, Saul Balcazar, Zach Parsley, Raul Melendez, Eric Harden, Alex Bolton, Matt Martin, Kinnums, Joseph Baker, Rodney Coleman, Chris Moore, Rinsler 526, Ben B, TB Lightning, Antti Kinnunen, Taylor Barkley, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Mason Kadalak, Ollie Fritz, Evan Dalton, Zach Allum, George Anthony Nunez, Kyle Hagel, Christopher, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Ryland, Michael S., David Bostick, Stewie 108, DB Cooper, Cody Bradbury, Tom Cargill, Richter 86, Michael J. Sutherland, Steve Hodge, Holfeldian, Ian Bravo, Noah J. Stevens, Barrett Boswell, Andrew Parker, Christopher DeVio, Chris Morton, Kevin Komaki, Mark Liberto, Johnny Waffles, Roto 24, Blake Israel, Jonathan Coach, Sean Mason, Josh Gravelick, Brian Chan, Jay, Organic Produce, Travelus Archuleta, Shane St. Pierre, Carlos Algarit, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubber, Ray Leja, Josh Yeager, Turbo Makes Games, Dan Parson, Martin Beck, Gavin, Brian Watkins, Joe Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Brody Rainey, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, David Everett, Eric Finkenbeiner, Lewin Ray Loper, Dylan Burns, Jason Lusky, Malachi Wall, Zach Binkley, John Schultz, David Chestnut, Yusuf, Anton K., Brian W. Rath, Alan Trembley, Tyler Bello, Ryan T. Mandel, Tony Zuniga, Sean Battershall, Robbie Hensley, Alex Cabrera, Lennon Brixey, Kyle Thomas, James Kinslow III, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinison, William O'Carroll, Jesper Jansen, Phil Krohn, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, David Mann, Petro Rose, Lockmore, Gio Corsi, Gerald Pennington, Justin Wagaman, David Iacolucci, Paul Joyce, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Shane Rayum, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Keith A. Lewis, Marius Garson Peterson, Tyler Harris, Matthew Perdue, Patrick Harper, Madmock Media, Jonathan Rice, and Casual Misfits Gaming.